there. This is the Hello Personality Podcast, the place where you'll learn how to use your personality type to create a radically authentic life that ignites your potential and creates positive ripple effects for all of those around you. I'm Leslie McDaniel, and this is Season 3, Episode 9. And we're continuing the series of interviews with real people to understand how the Authentic Life Framework shows up in their lives, as well as the relationship to each aspect of the framework that can equip you to live a radically authentic and impactful life. Today, we have Erica, who is the owner of The Kind Canine, a dog training and behavior consulting business in Bend, Oregon, alongside her husband of 7 years, Eric. She is a multi-certified professional dog trainer and has raised and worked with many wonderful companion animals throughout the course of her career. Prior to becoming a dog trainer and owning her own business, she was a teacher in both Colorado and Oregon public schools at the primary and secondary levels for nearly a decade, which helped her to create and foster a love for understanding the mechanics behind human behavior and development. I first met Erica when I reached out for help with our rescue pup. Both my husband and I and our dog were experiencing difficulties with her transition into our home, so Erica came alongside us and coached us to really understand Evie, her behavior, and the signals that she gave us but that we had missed. And she also worked with Evie to help her learn how to navigate the world with less stress and anxiety. Our relationship with Evie is so much better now, and she has so many more skills that she didn't have before, thanks to Erica's wisdom and guidance. Since our initial contact about 2.5 years ago, we've continued to have Erica work with Evie in a variety of ways, and Erica and I have become friends as a result. Unlike Mary Joy, whom you met in the last episode, Erica hasn't studied personality types in depth, but I had the opportunity to work with her and to verify her best-fitting type in the 16-type system as ISFP. In this episode, you'll hear me ask Erica some questions about her life and her business, and I'll draw connections to her responses and the way her mind is wired to judge and perceive, or in other words, to make decisions and to understand things. Erica is the representative for the IP types, and even though she can't represent all IPs, you'll still be able to hear some of the key themes of all types in this group. In addition to ISFPs, this group includes INFPs, INTPs, and ISTPs. Some of the IP patterns to notice in my conversation with Erica include her understanding of herself, her strong individuality, and as an IFP type, her strong personal convictions and code of ethics. These patterns are related to her introverted judging function, which is her dominant function in her cognitive function sequence. For ISFPs, this is introverted feeling. You'll also hear evidence of her perceiving functions in the middle of her cognitive function sequence, so she'll be able to bounce back and forth between sensing, which is her overall preference, and intuition. For Erica, these functions are extroverted sensing, her second function, and introverted intuition, her third function. When she's using her sensing function, you'll hear her give examples of things, and she'll talk about being in the moment and handling what is coming up right now. You can listen for her intuition function when she uses some metaphors to describe things, or when she's able to talk in generalities about things that actually haven't happened yet, or when she's able to come up with a theme or a core concept about something. Then her final function is extroverted thinking, which may be evidenced in the things she doesn't really like doing and in her overall working style, which we'll talk a little bit about in this interview. If you want to learn more about these cognitive functions, I encourage you to go back and listen to Season 1, Episodes 9, 10, and 11. All right, let's dive in. Hey, Erica, welcome to the Hello Personality Podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to dig into a little bit about your life and your business. And as you and I were just talking before I hit record, it's not super common for someone of your personality type to run a business. It's not unheard of, but I would love to just start out by talking a little bit about what that's been like for you and what motivated you to start your business. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about why you decided to start your business.
Yeah. So prior to owning my business, I was a teacher and I taught for about a decade in the public schools. And when COVID happened, teaching virtually just really was not something I found a lot of joy in. I also taught music. And so I kind of got shoved onto the back burner for a little while everybody figured out what they were doing. And so I had maybe 10 hours of work a week for quite a while everybody, again, was just kind of figuring out what they're doing. And it was hard for me to do that. It was hard for me to only work for a little bit of time and kind of have to fill the rest of my day with other things and being trapped inside. So I decided after doing some hobby dog training, I'd taken maybe a handful of clients up to that point. I decided to start my business and see where it went and what happened. And starting out, you know, I took maybe 10 clients at a time. And that was about all I could handle without the infrastructure that I needed to take on more than that. That was all like scheduling by hand, calling everybody, texting everybody, communication just constantly back and forth. And it was a lot to handle. And I think a little bit of like just getting a little bit farther down that journey, I started taking maybe 15 clients and I was like, wow, the admin of this is very, very challenging for me. I don't know how to organize all of this and make this all fluid and like actually have like a work-life balance that worked, because I just constantly found myself trying to meet the needs of my clients all the time, like 24 hours a day. And that was not healthy. So I brought on my husband, Eric, and he's a vital part of my business. I couldn't do this without him. And I think because I kind of farmed out all of those admin tasks that were just really hard for me to wrap my brain around, and even just like steering the ship, like I'm not the person who really wants to steer the ship. So I think farming all of that out to him, because it's perfect for his brain. I mean, his brain just like rocks with that kind of stuff. It's his processes. Yeah. It's his favorite thing. So I think like after figuring out how good he was at all of that and seeing my ability to take more clients on my own, and now I have this person who, you know, gets so much joy out of growing this business and see where we can take it. I think it's really nice to have that partnership. I definitely wouldn't be where we are now with this business without his help.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing all that. It sounds like you said at the beginning when you were talking about the teaching and the transitioning to online, like you just didn't find a lot of joy in that. And I'm curious, like, what is your connection to like how your work makes you feel, or the things that you decide to do? How much do your feelings play into your decision on what you choose to put your efforts towards?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely play a huge role. I don't know that I realized how unhappy I was teaching until I stopped. And once I left, I think when I was forced to stop, right, we were no longer meeting in person. I think taking a step away from it, I was like, whoa, I feel like a lot less anxious not having to go into work every day, not having to rotate groups of 25 kids through my door every 30 minutes, working with 19 different classroom teachers and trying to figure out what works best with their classroom dynamic. And not only that, but working with, you know, other employees in the school that, you know, I didn't particularly jive with. I just had a lot of things that were contributing to a really just negative valence emotional state all the time. And I think once I stepped away from that and I started doing something that, you know, I found a lot of joy in, that I was in charge of, I felt so like free and so much more able to pursue those things that are going to be more fulfilling. And I don't really like the word happy, I guess. That's not really the word that best describes it. But I think fulfilling and like creating a legacy might be more important to me than, you know, taking a classroom of 5-year-olds and then working with a different classroom of 5-year-olds the next year. And especially being... the music teacher and seeing so many kids and not really getting to create like very many deep relationships with a lot of those kids. I just felt like I was there to teach music every year in the same way all the time. And that was, just wasn't very fulfilling for me.
Yeah. You said you didn't like the word happy. Would the word like aligned, like it needs to feel
Yeah.
aligned?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And what does that mean to you when you hear that word? You had a big response to that.
Yeah, I mean, I use that word a lot when I talk about what I do now, like everything being in alignment with my core ethics and values. And I feel like I'm living my best authentic self when I'm living in alignment with those ethics and core values. And so I think because I do get to do that every day, I get to do something that's in alignment with those things, I think that probably brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you lit up at the exact right spot based on your type, which we'll talk about in just a second. But I'm curious, when you decided to start your business, I know you talked about some struggles with the admin and the communications and different things, but did you kind of have a big plan with sort of the steps all laid out, or was it I see
No.
it seems kind of... Yeah, well
Absolutely
tell
not.
me. Okay, tell me about your approach then.
So I never plan anything. That's not that doesn't fly for me a lot of times. I really thrive on structure, but I suck at creating that structure for myself. I think I've gotten good at that in maybe some other ways, but I really need somebody else to create that infrastructure that's going to help me be the most successful. And I think part of that is just like me being, I don't want to hold myself accountable. I need somebody else to hold me accountable. So like, with my two employees right now that we're training, I do a book club with them every week, and that holds me accountable to actually like working through this content with them. Of like, we have a set deadline, we have a certain number of pages that we're going to do, we all meet together, and it holds me accountable for that. If you just said, Erica, read this book, and I want you to have this section done, and there's no follow-up, or like, it's self-driving, that's not going to work for me. So I guess what I'm saying with all of that is that I started this business not with the intent of being where we are at right now. I just wanted to do something that, I think felt like it was better aligned with who I am and where I am right now. And I mean, my biggest plan was that I just wanted to make sure I could make as much money as I was making before. And that was it. And I was like, if I can get there, I'm fine. Like we're doing okay. Like I don't need it much more than that. But again, having my partner who has a very different kind of brain and a different way of looking at that, he's always very growth minded, always looking out like several years in the future. And I appreciate that because all of his plans that he lays out helps like me feel safe and stabilizes him without me actually having to do that.
That makes sense. And for the listener, just as an FYI, Eric's type is ENTJ, same as mine. So you can, if you're familiar with type, you can hear some of the things that Erica's talking about. You talked a little bit about structure being really good for you. Do you ever rebel against that structure or the yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I have mixed feelings about it, I think. I think I thrive on it in a lot of ways, but I also want to have the freedom to be able to act. I don't really like the word spontaneously. Like, that's not really what it is. And it's also not impulsively. I don't feel like I'm a highly impulsive person, but I want to feel like I have the freedom and the agency to follow my inclinations wherever they might take me. Yeah, I think that's the best way I can put that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I love that you're describing basically wanting to be directed or wanting to go where you feel like you're being led or where you want to go. But also needing a little bit of safety, a little bit of security, and not completely rebelling against all structure. Like you like the freedom, but you also like a little bit of that structure in place. Does that
Yeah,
resonate with you?
definitely.
What would you say is the one thing that you love most about your business? It can be like a particular activity or just something about your business that you love doing the most.
Yeah. What do I love doing the most? I mean, I really enjoy. I didn't think this is what I would enjoy the most, but I really like the depth of the relationships that I've created with a lot of my clients. I think initially maybe the thing I enjoyed the most was working with the dogs and problem solving and trying different things and seeing what lands in a particular case and what doesn't. And I really like that process a lot, and I still do. But I think, like, I get a lot more fulfillment out of these, like, deep client relationships where, like, people feel safe and secure enough to, like, share vulnerable things with me. And I'm just thinking about this one particular client who she had a conversation. She has a particularly aggressive dog, and we've worked with him pretty extensively. And she had a conversation with a friend the other day about some pretty forceful training methods, and they kind of got a little into it, and she felt comfortable enough to message me and tell me about that conversation and just be really open and vulnerable about it. And I really appreciate that, because I want my clients to feel like they can come to me and they can talk to me about those things instead of having to be trapped in their brain about, you know, how do I interpret these things? Is this the right course of action? Like, I just appreciate that they feel comfortable enough doing that. And she also told me, she's like, and that prompted me to write a review for you, 'cause I haven't yet. And so then she sent me a draft of her review for me. And I was like, oh, that's very sweet.
That's awesome. Yeah. When you first said the depth of relationships, I was going to ask, with the people or the dogs, but it sounds like it maybe was at first was the dogs. And now it's this unexpected connection with people as well. Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like too, that you maybe want people to be authentic with you as much as authentic as you want to be in your role as the trainer and the owner. Like, you want people to be authentic with you in the way that they're in the struggles that they're having, or just being true with you. Does that ring a bell for you?
Definitely. I really love when people feel like they can be their authentic selves. Because I know how good that feels for me to feel comfortable enough and safe enough to express myself freely and not have to, like, mask in front of people. So I love it when I get that back, because I know that the energy or the vibe or whatever that I'm putting out there is landing, because they're feeling the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. So you talked about the part that you love. What's the thing that you like least about running your business, or the thing that you struggle with the most?
Yeah. Anything that requires me to sit down and focus on something.
Yeah. Such as, can you give us an example?
Yeah. So with all of my clients, I provide a really thorough, it's called a treatment plan. So it has a summary of every session. It has homework from every session. And then it also has links to additional resources and things I think might be helpful. And it really just becomes like the home document of all of our work together. And it's really valuable. And it, like, before I say why I hate it so much, I want to explain why it's so valuable. Because in my personal experience working with other trainers, I never got anything like that. And it was really hard for me to remember what we did in those sessions, remember what I was supposed to do between sessions. Like, it was just really hard for me to do that. And so when I created this document, I was like, I want to be able to provide this to people. And I didn't realize at the moment, like, how hard that would be for me and why I probably wasn't getting that from a lot of other trainers. So I think it's really challenging for me to sit down and, like, synthesize everything from a session and, like, try to get the most important information, because I don't want it to be 10 pages long, because then it's not helpful. So yeah, it's like boil
it down.
Yes. Yeah. It's figuring out, like, what's important. What's the most important stuff here? What's the meat? And that process is just very taxing for me. So I sit down for 5 minutes. I get some stuff out. I kind of feel like that. I don't know if you're familiar with SpongeBob, but there's an episode where he goes to write an essay. And he writes the word "the," and he does it in, like, really fancy calligraphy. And they show, like, this whole, like, montage of him, like, writing really, like, furiously for, like, hours. And then he, like, gets it up and it just says "the" in, like, very fancy letters. And that's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's awesome. That makes sense. And we might talk about that too, why that might be the case. But the difficulty in boiling things down. But that's wonderful. So I want to talk a little bit about, now that we've talked a little bit about your business and your relationship to some of the aspects of it, I want to talk a little bit about the way that your mind is wired in the 16 type system. And we've touched on several of your cognitive functions so far. But the first one that you lead with, kind of the thing that you first experience life through, is called introverted feeling. And it's what we call a judging function, or it's a decision-making function. And it's basically about knowing how you feel about something and making your decisions based on strong convictions or a personal code of ethics or value system. And before I begin asking you some questions about this, how does that even relate to you? Do you feel like, yes, that's totally me? I do that all the time.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I can tell you, if you were to sit down with Eric and ask him that, like, he would give you exactly what you just said verbatim in his description of me and how I guide my decisions.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I want to dig just a little deeper into some of those aspects. And I'd love for you to tell us, like, how do you see your relationship to your feelings?
I mean, it's definitely been a road. It's been a journey, because I feel things very big and very intense in most situations, whether that's positive or negative. Or like, there's just really not much of a middle ground for me. Like, I feel pretty strongly about most things. And so when I was younger, and I would have, you know, I struggled with depression as a teenager. I struggled with self-harm. I had a lot of anger in particular. And whenever I would express that in any way, it was, I guess for lack of a better term, it was just kind of like shoved down. And it was like, you're not supposed to feel that. It's not very like polite to feel that way. And so I think for a long time, I just kind of distanced myself from a lot of those big feelings. And I would try to, like, you know, I guess keep them inside and not express myself. And that, like, feeling of not being my authentic self was too hard for me. And I think when I hit my mid-20s, probably, is when I started being like, well, this is ridiculous. I just need to, like, live my life the way I'm supposed to live it and be able to express myself within, you know, safe parameters. And so I think it's definitely, like, I'm at a place now where I can feel something and I'm able to acknowledge, like, where that might be coming from, why that might be coming up for me. Whereas before, I might've felt something and it would just, like, take over. And it was, and I still, you know, I have those moments, certainly. I think we all do. But I think now, like, I have a much healthier relationship with my feelings and how I respond to them and how I express them.
Yeah. So you said that you kind of, like, tried to keep them inside, try maybe being the key word there. But when you were doing that, were they still there, right? Like, you still could feel them. It wasn't like they were repressed or they went away somewhere. They were just very much, just not, you didn't allow them out into the world, so to speak. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah. I didn't feel safe enough to express them.
Yeah. Yeah. And something I'm also curious about, we talked a little bit about this when you and I did the conversational typing session, but what is it like for you when you come across a new feeling, maybe something that you've never felt before? How do you interact with that, or what's your relationship with new feelings?
I'm really curious about them, I think, more than anything else. I usually sit down and I talk it out with Eric when I'm experiencing something that I have no experience with. And I can't always, like, find a label for it or, like, where that is coming from, but I don't know. I feel like I'm more curious about it than anything else. I just want to ask more questions about it and learn about it.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's probably a mostly positive thing, or at least it's an interesting thing that you like. Is that true? Yeah. I always think this is interesting too, because my husband is an ISFP as well. And he said something very similar, and he likes to watch certain movies or different things that will allow him to feel different things that he's never felt before. And I think that's a pretty key piece of someone who has this introverted feeling so high up or in the place that your type does. And that's basically what you just said. You're very curious about it, and it's it's like, oh, what is this? Maybe I can try to figure out something else new about myself. And yeah. Is that a way into who you are then?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many of your choices would you say are determined by your feelings?
I mean, pretty dang close to 100%, I would say. I mean, within reason, when like something feels like it's the right decision, but everything else is pointing in the other direction saying, don't do that. I might listen to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, like I'm not a highly impulsive person. I do think about things. It's just that the way that I feel about something weighs heavier than whether it might be logical or
yeah,
well thought out or planned.
Totally. Hello, Nia.
Yeah, hang on one second.
Okay.
I can't believe he finished his entire chew.
Oh, I guess that was Chester, huh? Not Nia.
Yeah, it was. I was surprised that Nia was fine.
Okay, so did you finish your answer to that question? The how many of your choices do you feel like are determined by your feelings?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I did. I feel like it's okay. It's pretty close to 100% most of the time. But like, I do feel like, you know, I don't just do things based on my feelings if everything else is pointing in the other direction saying, don't do that, Erica.
Yeah. How likely, though, let's say that there's a bunch of things pointing in the other direction, but you're really, really convicted of something and your conscience is like, no, I have to do it this way. I want to do it this way. How likely are you to go against your conscience?
I mean, it takes quite a lot to weigh that scale in that direction.
Yeah.
It's very uncommon.
Yeah. And that's what I would expect for someone of your type too. Just it's really, really unusual for anyone to go against those personal values or your deep convictions or how you're feeling about something. Have you ever been swayed like by someone else from what your conscience was telling you?
If I have a lot of like personal trust with them, yes. Mm-hmm. So there are times in which I'll sit down with Eric and we'll talk about something and he might be able to sway the way that I'm thinking, but that's because I have a lot of value in his input and I trust him. So yeah. I think that can be helpful, but definitely not from somebody that like, I don't necessarily value their input or we don't have like a very close relationship or whatever. Like I'm less likely to even let that enter my brain.
Right. Yeah. Probably not even on your radar.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So now that we've talked a little bit about this introverted feeling, decision-making function, and how it shows up in your life and how you relate to it, I'd like to talk a little bit about its opposite. And the opposite is called extroverted thinking. And it's the opposite of introverted feeling. And it's always paired. These two functions are always paired together. But for you, it's the last one that's in your cognitive function sequence. And this function is all about getting things done, being productive, managing projects, and prioritizing tasks based on just what's effective or what's efficient or just what will work. And I know in some of our conversation already, you've hinted at some of the difficulties you've had with this in the beginning with your business, trying to organize things and get things done. So I would love to know just where do you find yourself struggling in this area, or how do you even relate to this description? First of all, let's go there first.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. How do I relate to this description? I mean, even just all of the words that you said in that description are all like very like gut reaction, hard no, like don't. And it is interesting because I do feel like at other points in my life, I was better at those things. Mm. Like, I feel like when I was a teacher, I was a lot better at taking care of those the admin tasks that I had, the, scheduling, following up with parents and that kind of stuff. Like I was a lot better at that. And I don't know. Well, I do know after talking to my neuropsych exactly why that's happening, but I did used to have a lot of those skills. And I think because running my own business requires so much of it, and that I'm, and that ultimately I'm shouldering all of it. With obviously before Eric was introduced into the picture, I think that is when I became acutely aware of how much I hated those things and how much I would avoid those things, actively avoid those things as much as possible.
You know, usually with a function in this position, we can do it in like a small lane. So there's a little area, a container. So it sounds like when you were a teacher, you had a container for it and it wasn't that overwhelming. And then once it was opened up to like, now I have to do all of it, every single thing that's in any of those categories. And so that totally makes sense why there was a rejection of it.
Totally.
Usually it, it's kind of like on or off a lot of times, or maybe it's a little bit spiky. I would suspect that you probably do something maybe like you have a to-do list or a checklist of some sort at times. Do you use that?
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of things that I've done to help myself cope better with these kind of tasks. Like I have a notepad on my phone that I've had going for probably, I don't know, 5 years. That is just my ongoing to-do list. And it's like, if it doesn't, if it's not on the to-do list, I'm probably not going to do it. Because I just won't remember. I just won't. And sometimes it's simple little things like text Leslie back, right? Mm-hmm. Or like email Renee, or like it's tiny, tiny things. I'm never going to remember it if I don't house it all in one place like that. Yeah. So, and then like, for example, I'm looking at right now where I'm sitting, I have a whiteboard with all of my clients, all of the dog names with the number of sessions that they have left next to them, and all of my inactive clients and all of my pet sits that I have scheduled. It's all right there in one place, because otherwise if I try to house that all in my brain, obviously I can't do that. And there are way more efficient systems than what I have here, but this is what my brain did on its own.
Well, you know, I think it's partly about what finding what works for you. And, you know, it is coupled with that introverted feeling. So if that process works for you, that is a way that you're using that function. Another aspect of it that is often with people who use it higher up, like Eric, would be kind of resource management, like knowing how to find the right person for the right job, or to find the right resource for different things. And even you bringing on Eric to your business, like that is, you knew that that you needed some help in an area. So that was a way in which that function, you saw that I'm not that good at it. Eric is, let me bring him on and help me in these areas.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Another aspect of extroverted thinking is kind of just what it sounds like, being able to extrovert your thoughts or to share your reasoning, to explain why you feel something or you think something. And I'm curious about your relationship to that. What's that like for you?
That is very hard in a lot of cases, because it's so like, how I feel about things is so deeply ingrained. And I try, like, I really want to have good explanations for why I feel the way that I do, because I want people to understand where I'm coming from. But I get a lot of anxiety about like trying to explain it. Because it comes from somewhere like deep, deep down that I don't necessarily have a scientific explanation for.
Exactly. Or logical explanation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And in some ways, you probably like maybe rebel against the need to have to explain.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that makes sense for someone with that function in the inferior position, we'd call it. There's a sense of like, I don't really, it's first of all, difficult to explain, reason or reason out. It's not like you can't do it ever. But in general, especially if it's related to your feelings or your convictions, those things, like you said, are so deep within. It's kind of like, I don't have language for that. And I don't feel like I should have to, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I also feel that way about like relationships with other people. Like all of my romantic relationships, I've always had a really hard time explaining how I feel about someone, or why I feel that way about them. Or like, it's just such a deep intuitive knowing that I don't know.
It's just, it makes sense to you in your internal world, and that should be enough, right?
Right.
At least that may be why you feel.
Right. Doesn't everybody else feel this way?
Yeah. Unfortunately, no. We all see things differently. But yeah, the other thing I was wondering about is when we talked before, you had said it was deeply uncomfortable for you to tell other people what to do, except for maybe Eric. And I'm curious, like, is that true for you? And why do you feel like that? Here I am asking you to reason out or to tell me the reasons, but why might that be the reason for you?
Because I want, okay, like if I take this in the context of like my employees, for example, because now we have three trainers that work underneath me, two of which are brand new and one of them has been with us since November. And I feel like in the beginning, I feel comfortable telling them what to do and giving them some resources and giving them some guidance. But ultimately, like, I want people to feel like they can critically think about things and come to their own conclusions. Mm-hmm. And so like with my clients, I try really hard to create kind of a framework for people so that they can problem solve and troubleshoot through their own stuff. Because ultimately, like, the behaviors your dog is showing you right now at 2 years old are going to be probably different than the behaviors that you're seeing at 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
And so I want people to understand the overarching, like, this is how it all works, rather than like, this is how you work on this one tiny thing in isolation. And let me give you all of the micro details in this.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably where it comes from, is that like, mm-hmm. I know that there's just a really expansive body of knowledge in whatever area we're talking about. And I want people to be able to make their own educated and informed decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make those decisions for them.
Yeah. That makes sense. And is there an element too of them sort of having autonomy and being able to lead themselves in the way they feel is best, as long
Definitely.
As it's within the realm? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's important to me because that is so, I mean, that's just a core belief that I hold for myself, is that like, I want to be able to live my authentic life, and I want to be able to have the autonomy, that was a good word for it, the control and the agency to make my own decisions. And I want everybody else to have that too, because I know how deeply fulfilling that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really beautiful. So I want to move then to the functions that are in the middle. So we've talked about the first and the last, and the functions that are in the middle kind of go back and forth. And there's a sensing function and an intuition function. And even in our conversation today, I kind of hear you bouncing back and forth. Mm-hmm. So that second one is extroverted sensing, and it's all about kind of like what's happening right now. So maybe even having that list that you've talked about right in front of you, or, you know, knowing like, this is what I do in this situation, being able to show up and kind of merge, for example, with your dog in the leash as things are happening, and knowing what to do and kind of going with the flow. And then the third function is the opposite of that. It's called introverted intuition. And it is about kind of planning ahead a little bit and thinking, anticipating scenarios of what's going to happen, or like you just said, giving your employees kind of like the overarching theme of something rather than every little detail, which would be a little more of the sensing side. And back at the beginning, you were talking about, when I asked you about your business, you were like, no, I much rather like just kind of show up and see what happens. That's more on the sensing side, the extroverted sensing. And you kind of laughed a little bit about the long-term plan, and that's more in Eric's realm. So that's just a little bit about how those two show up for you. But I'm curious, with that extroverted sensing, that being in the moment and being able to take in what's happening now, I'm curious, how, from your perspective, how well do you feel like you can adjust to things that you observe in the moment, whether it's with the dogs you're working with or just any other circumstance or situation?
I think it depends. I think with regards to my work, I'm very good at it because I have a wide variety of experiences to draw from. So I have, lots of experiences to inform whatever I'm going to do next. And I think that's really helpful, because at least somewhere in my head, I'm sure there's like a framework of like, or like a tier list of like how I'm working down or working up through something. I don't think of it that way. I definitely am like, well, this right here isn't working, so we're going to just pivot to this. And like, I'm ready for it. Like, I'm happy to do that. But when it's something that I don't know a lot about, I definitely have a lot less flexibility And I become very anxious if I am being given too much leeway. Like, you know, what's interesting is I actually feel this way about music. So like I was always terrible at improvisation, improvisational music, jazz. It would scare me. Like every time I would try to do it, I'd be like, I can't do this. Like I would just panic. But if you gave me a piece of music that, you know, is a classical piece of music that's written in Italian, I can sight read it just fine. Mm-hmm. Like I can read it and sing it reasonably well the first time by looking at it, not by hearing it. Although hearing it definitely helps, but I can't do that same thing. Like if you give me a lead sheet that says like, here's the basic flow of how this song works, make something up, I'd be like, absolutely not. I can't do that. I need bumpers.
Yeah. Is there an element of, well, I think you've already mentioned this, but an element of having to have had that experience before, to be able to reference that and to know, okay, I've done this before.
I think so.
Yeah. And you're an introvert after all too. So we're talking about something that's happening in the external world. So if it's something you don't have experience in, then it's probably going to create a little more anxiety for sure as an introvert. Yeah. So how important would you say it is for you to experience something in order to believe it's possible?
I think it's pretty important. If I don't have an experience to draw from, or I don't have others' experiences to draw from, that's also really helpful for me. If I know that somebody else has done this and I have the information to support that this strategy might work or this line of thinking will be helpful here or whatever, if I don't have anything to draw from, I'm super nervous about it. Like I don't know how to move forward. I'm almost like paralyzed in those moments. But I try so hard to not only fill like my own experiences so that I have lots to draw from and feel comfortable and confident navigating through different scenarios, but I also like try to create a circle of professionals around me who have other experiences that I can draw from and learn from. So I think that because I kind of naturally do that, I network not for the sake of marketing or like referral stuff or anything like that, but just for the sake of like having diverse experiences. I think that's really helpful for me.
Yeah. And actually going back to that extroverted thinking we were talking about, that's one way that it's showing up for you is kind of knowing who can I go to ask for this. I know when we were working with you through several different issues with our little pup, I know you went to several people to be, you know, to check on different things and to have other resources for us. So that's another way that's showing up. That's really cool. Those are both of your extroverted functions working together, I believe.
Awesome.
So that brings us to your third function. I want to go ahead and talk about your introverted intuition. It's the opposite of your extroverted sensing. So instead of talking about what's happening in the moment and the details of what's going on, it's more about being able to anticipate what's coming and being able to run a scenario in your mind and figure out something without having experience. It's also about being able to sum something up, like find a summary or an overarching theme without looking at all the individual details. And I'm curious, when it comes to those things I just described, what's coming up for you? What's your relationship to them?
Yeah, I think I have a lot of like anxiety about this question. It's kind of weird. I think there's definitely some level of, again, curiosity in some of those situations where like, if I don't have any experiences to draw from, I can go in kind of one of two different directions. I can be a little excited and curious about it and want to learn more. But if there's any level of like threat present, and that can be like not necessarily to my physical safety, but in a wide variety of ways, if I feel like there's any possible threat, then I feel a lot more anxiety about it, which I think makes sense. But I'm not really sure how to describe this, I guess. And I mean, that feels like an answer in and of itself. It's like, if I don't have any experiences to draw from, I will it'll be the last thing I think about when I go to sleep if it's happening the next day. And I'll have like some level of excitement and curiosity if there's no threat present. But if there is a threat present or there's a possibility that it might not go well, like one of the things actually that I struggled with early in my teaching career was when I had to have concerts and stuff with the kids. I had never like planned and carried out a concert. And there were so many threats present in those situations. And I would not sleep well the night before a concert. And I would overcompensate in my planning to try to avoid all of those outcomes, even though I absolutely hated all of that planning so much. And most of the time I didn't carry it out very effectively. Like I could overplan the crap out of something and then I would miss like 14 points of my 34 point plan. So
Yeah.
I think my natural inclination in those situations is to roll with the punches within a certain like level of structure. And so when I try to over plan, I like create more anxiety because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to like check all the boxes that I've created for myself. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And really the way this function will probably work for you, you know, it is intimately attached to that extroverted sensing. So the timeline where you will use this is probably a lot shorter. So maybe let's imagine you're working with a dog and you see a behavior like, in those situations, are you kind of anticipating maybe two or three steps ahead and knowing like, if I do this, then this will happen. Or if I change this, then this will. Yeah.
Because I have, again, enough experiences to inform that I can almost always see something coming before it's coming. Or like I can anticipate based on my first conversation with somebody, what they're probably going to struggle with in the training process as a person, like mechanically what they're going to struggle with.
Yeah. So, and how do you know that, do you think?
I have no idea. I pick up on like subtle cues that they give off. Mm-hmm. Like I just met this new client last week who she like in our, we just sat down and we talked for probably about a half an hour before we started, kind of let her dog get comfortable, and he's good with people. It was fine. Mm-hmm. But I knew in that conversation, like she was going to struggle with timing. Because she couldn't accurately describe to me like what her dog's behavior looked like when she would give a given cue. So like I asked her, like, when you call your dog, what do you specifically say to them? Under what context are you calling them? Like, give me a little more information about it so we can talk about how we're going to work on it. And just in her answers, I was like, okay, she's really going to struggle with like the precision of timing that she's going to need in order to give the cue, reward the dog correctly, like all the pieces. She's going to struggle with it because she can't even describe to me like, what behavior are you asking for when you tell your dog come?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. And that's another way that this is working, this function for you. It's like you get an insight. You're coming up with kind of the gist, you're summarizing everything that she's saying and coming up with a core concept, timing. That's the thing that she's going to struggle with. So that's another way this is working. It's finding the pattern of all the little individual things that she's describing in the moment there with you to have that core theme from the conversation. That's the way your introverted intuition is working in that situation. Does that make sense for you?
That totally makes sense. And I think the only thing I would say about that is that that's happening up here, like in my head, but that's not going to happen out of my mouth. I wouldn't be able to sit her down and tell her why I think she's probably going to struggle with one aspect of the training process. And it wouldn't be helpful anyway. I wouldn't do that, but I wouldn't be able to articulate it. It's happening.
Right. And that's the way that often works is like, it's just sudden insights that come up. And remember that function we talked about, the extroverted thinking, that reasoning part is still kind of down there at the inferior position. So there's probably less interest in being able to explain it. And then sometimes it's harder for anyone who uses this function to trace back and figure out where did that come from. It's like, I just know, you know, there's like a gut instinct. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and transition to talk about the authentic life framework that I've been sharing over the last several episodes of this season of the podcast. This is, I think, going to be really valuable for the person who's listening to be able to hear about your relationship to each of the concepts in this framework as an IP personality type. And if you're listening and you aren't familiar with the authentic life framework, you can go back and listen to episodes 1 through 6 to dig deeper into the definitions that I'm about to share with Erica for each concept. So, Erica, the first element of this framework is consciousness. And the way that I define this is the state of being aware of how you show up and interact with the world, knowing the filters through which you view the world, and understanding your patterns of behavior. So I'm curious, what do you feel like your relationship is to consciousness in the way that I've described it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I have a different reaction to the word consciousness than what you outlined. So I think that's kind of interesting just by itself. But I think that I try really hard to put myself out there as much authentically myself as I can. And that goes in the professional context too. Like I'm not afraid to tell somebody something in a pretty like blunt way if I feel like it's the way that I would say it and mean it. Like I'm less likely to like sugarcoat things or try to make something more palatable for somebody. I really want to put myself out there and for it to be received however it's going to be received. Yeah. And I'm okay with whatever direction that swings in. Like, again, I don't really like as much as when I was younger, I don't really seek like that social approval. And I don't really, I don't take issue with the fact if somebody just disagrees with what I have to say or something, because I know that I spoke the truth that I had and I needed to get that out there in that way. Otherwise I just feel like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but that was kind of where my head went.
Yeah. And you said you thought of a different way of viewing consciousness. What came up for you when I first said the word?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really big into the idea of like higher consciousness that we're like all a part of. And I think that I feel that. That's not something I could articulate or describe what that's like or where that comes from or anything like that. But I think like that's my relationship with that word, is that we're all kind of existing on this same plane, and that, you know, there's a certain level of knowledge and understanding and consciousness that we all have together collectively. And I think that's really powerful.
Absolutely. I think for me, the reason I start where I just did, because I think that's kind of a first step to understanding that you're part of this greater consciousness. And I think each individually becoming more conscious of how we're showing up in the world allows us to be more conscious in the collective way. So that's kind of why I've described it that way. And I think we're talking about the same thing, just maybe different levels of it.
No, I love that.
Yeah. So the second aspect is clarity. So whereas consciousness, I believe, is an ongoing process of noticing and paying attention, clarity starts to get into translating those observations about yourself into meaning and knowing what actions to take with what you've observed. So I'm curious, first of all, what your relationship is to clarity, like whether you want to think about knowing what you want, or knowing the steps to take to create the kind of life you want, or just, what's coming up for you as I'm talking about clarity?
I mean, it's all very confusing for me because everything is fuzzy all the time in my head. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is really clear. And everything happens so fast that, you know, I think that's part of the reason why I live my life the way that I do. So I have like mixed feelings about this word. I think it's really, like, I would love to feel more clear and to be able to have things more fleshed out and detailed and like understand the process with more clarity. Mm-hmm. But that is, it's a hard one for me.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I'm not always super, I'm just not always super clear.
Yeah. And is it seem a little murky because we're involving the future? Because earlier you were talking about, you know, knowing your values and your convictions and kind of how you feel about things. You always have strong feelings. So it seems like you have a lot of clarity in that area.
But yeah, I definitely.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe some element of the future that's coming into play here, but also just the ability to articulate things that going on in my body. Like it's hard for me to communicate those things clearly.
Yeah.
That's something I've always struggled with. Again, like even just talking about like personal relationships, I can feel very strongly about someone or something they've done or whatever, but I can't always articulate why or how I got there or anything like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that, I think, again, that goes back to those, that description of those functions that we've talked about.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense for someone of your type, and not something you have to do. It's an area where you can grow a little bit at a time. And it sounds like you've had some experience, like little containers, as we've talked about. Mm-hmm. So where would you say, we talked a little bit about, you know, your introverted feeling clarity. Would you say that is where you have the most clarity in your life? Like, maybe not talking about extroverting it to anyone or telling anyone, but do you have clarity of like who you are and what you want and what you value the most?
I think if you would have asked me that question 5 years ago, I probably would say no, but I do feel like I do now. Yeah.
Ah, interesting. What was different 5 years ago?
I think I, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot, but I felt like I was always kind of groomed for teaching. Like it was what I was supposed to do. I was good at music. So, you know, you're not going to be a performing musician because that won't actually like be fruitful and won't actually make a living. And that's not what I wanted to do anyway. But so he's like, so obviously you're going to teach music, right? And I was like, I guess so. Like, this is what I've been doing all of high school. So cool, I guess. And I think I did all of that because I was like fulfilling somebody else's agenda for me. And when I was like deep in the thick of teaching, maybe there was a period of time there where I was like, I feel satisfied and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I feel like there probably was, maybe the first few years. But 5 years ago, I was at the tail end of my teaching career, and I just felt like I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It sounds like the clarity is you knew that you didn't want to be doing that, but maybe you didn't have clarity on what you wanted to do or what you wanted to replace it with. Got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when you don't have a backup plan, like you just, I was good at it, right? Like I would get observations and stuff from my principal, and she would constantly like reassure me that like I'm doing a good job and everything's great. And she'd like use me as an example, and I would like teach our, you know, fellow teachers, and it was great, but I wasn't happy.
Yeah. That makes sense. So moving on to the third aspect of the framework, which is confidence. And the way I define confidence is having the willingness to step into the unknown and to take some new actions, or even acknowledging, being confident enough to acknowledge the gifts that you bring into the world. So as I describe those things, what's coming up for you about the word confidence?
Well, you said two things that are like, that struck vastly different. I think I'm very confident in bringing myself and my knowledge and my expertise to particularly my field. Like I feel very confident in my ability to do that. I think maybe I still struggle with a little bit of imposter syndrome in some ways, in some situations, especially like locally. That's a much bigger conversation. But you mentioned like stepping into the unknown. That is extremely uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
As we've talked about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is a beautiful answer, because I think everyone, no matter what their type is, they can be confident in some ways and maybe not confident in other ways, or confident in certain areas of their life. Maybe you're really confident in your own inner world, but less confident when it comes to the external world. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And that tends to track as a pattern with introverts are more comfortable and confident with their inner world and what's going on inside, and less confident in the external world. And extroverts can be the opposite at times. So yeah, that makes sense. So thank you for sharing that with me. Anything else come up for you as we're thinking about the word confidence?
I don't think so. Other than that, I just have a really complicated relationship with that word, because there are some things that I like, I'm really, really good at establishing boundaries. I'm very, very good at that. I feel confident in my ability to do that. But there are so many situations. Like, I'm just thinking about, there are certain clients that I've worked with who are not necessarily what we would call our ideal clients. And I don't feel confident in those conversations because they're bringing so much more of a threat to the table than like, somebody who's open, somebody who's willing. They don't necessarily need to like have my philosophy, but they need to be willing to have a conversation, a civil conversation. Yeah. And when they're not, and when I'm with, you know, somebody who's just telling me about how they're going to continue spanking their dog, I don't feel confident in my ability to diffuse that because I feel like such a rise inside of me that I'm like, I can't think clearly and have this conversation. Like, I just have a really complicated relationship with it. That's the best way I can put it.
Yeah. Well, you and I have the same functions, but just completely opposite order. And I'm the same way though. It's like when something hits me so strongly, it's like, a lot of times I can't think clearly, at least when I was younger. I'm better now, I think, but having to step away and take a minute to let that diffuse within myself first before I can go in and interact in a calm way.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fourth aspect is community. And this is the way I define it in terms of this framework of helping people live an authentic and impactful life is having an intentional and supportive group of people who are working toward a similar kind of life or a similar growth journey, essentially just a support network. And you've talked a little bit about some people that you feel comfortable going to. And I'm curious what it's like for you, what your relationship is with community and any connections you see between maybe some of the things we've already talked about and community.
Yeah. I mean, it's so vital for me because I want to have people that I can surround myself with to create those diverse experiences, have all those different perspectives, and also just be able to support each other. So like recently I felt, this is probably like 3 months ago, I felt like really overwhelmed by the state of, and I feel like this a lot, I guess, with the state of dog training in Bend, and just how many very, very forceful trainers there are in this area that do some really horrific things to dogs. And I get really overwhelmed when I start to think about that because I feel like I'm not making a big enough difference. I'm not, you know, I'm working 4 days a week. I should be working 7 days a week. You know, like I get really overwhelmed by that. And so I decided kind of just on a split moment decision to create a little like group on Facebook for me and all of the other forestry professionals in the area to talk about things, to plan get-togethers, to support each other. One of them just like, you know, got a new puppy and needed to socialize her. And so we all like went over to her house and we did a whole bunch of games with her and it was super fun and just rejuvenating, like to be with like-minded people. And that's how I combat a lot of that is by seeking that support system. So I think community is just so important to me and so vital, and I probably wouldn't be able to do what I do every day without it because, and that goes for teaching too, quite frankly, I wouldn't have been able to survive, you know, an all kindergarten facility with 400 kindergartners without a really incredible staff to fall back on and learn from. Because I was teaching middle school before that. It was a steep learning curve. So I've always been pretty good at like creating a support network for myself and having people that I can rely on and talk to and work things out with and brainstorm and all that kind of stuff. So it's just really important to me.
Have you ever shied away from community or groups of people, or like, has that ever been an issue of like, oh, I don't want to be part of that?
Yeah. If I feel like the group or that kind of community is not in alignment with my core ethics and values, I'm happy not being a part of it. I think the point of it is that I have like-minded people so that we can really like dive deep into things and I can like unravel some of these things that happen in my head without having to go all the way back to like the foundations of why my thoughts are where they're at. You know, it's a very different conversation to have with somebody is like why you should use food in training versus like how utilizing punishment is reinforcing for the punisher. That is a deep conversation that talks about like cultural perspectives with punishment and how they influence our decisions with our animals. And then this one is like, use treats and reinforce your dog. Like, these are two very, very different cups.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I need both of them. I need both of them. Like, I want to help people and I meet people where they're at, but I also want to have these like deep and fulfilling and nourishing conversations with people that have had all of the same thoughts that I've had so that we can actually unravel some of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So let's move on to the last element of the framework, which is consistency. And the way that I define that is this is regularly and intentionally applying or paying attention to all of these C's of this framework. And so I'm curious, where do you think that you are the most consistent in your life? And where do you feel like you struggle?
Like with regards to the other C's we've talked about?
Yeah, it can be that or just in general, whichever way you'd like to answer.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting because I don't feel like I've been very consistent over the course of my life. So I don't really feel like I have a great answer for this because everything has changed so much.
Yeah.
Especially just in the last few years that I feel like I'm just now kind of like waking up. And I hear this happens in your 30s, like everybody gets into their 30s and this is what happens. But I feel like maybe consciousness might be the place that's been the most consistent, especially like since like my late teens. Mm-hmm. I've always just been very mindful about how I'm very conscious about how I've been presenting myself to the world. And I had a lot of struggles with identity when I was a teenager, and like I didn't know how to put myself out there and like be comfortable with it and like be okay with how people received that, whatever they were going to receive it with. But I do feel like, you know, since I was maybe 17 or 18, like that's been pretty consistent, that I feel comfortable being my authentic self around everybody, and they can kind of take it or leave it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Well, Erica, that brings us to the end of our conversation. Is there anything else that you feel like you didn't get to say or that you'd like to share about people that have a similar type as you? Anything else you want to leave us with before we wrap up?
I don't think I have anything specific to say. Sometimes I feel like it's kind of a battleground in my head all the time. But you know, the more that I learn about myself and the more that I find comfort in expressing that, I think that just gets a little less intense every day. So I hope that's true for other people.
Yeah. What, I don't know if you will like this question or not, but what advice would you give other people who are in a similar situation or similar, who have some similarities to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I could give specific advice other than like the choices that have felt good for me are the choices that I feel like are right for me.
Yeah.
And I've followed that for the last few years, and I'm in a pretty good place. Like I feel good about where I am.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for your time, and love the conversation. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Erica, who is our IP representative. And I just loved how comfortable Erica is in her own skin, in her own convictions, in her own understanding of herself. And as you can see, all types have strengths and struggles when it comes to living a radically authentic and impactful life. With Erica, the main strength that she seemed to relate to when it comes to the Authentic Life Framework was this ability to be conscious of what she's doing and of her convictions and of her feelings. And that makes a lot of sense because her introverted feeling function is her first or dominant function. If you have any questions at all about this interview or the Authentic Life Framework or the 16 Types Personality System in general, Now's the time to submit your questions to be answered on the last episode of this season, and that will be season 3, episode 12. Just go to hellopersonality.com/podcast, and there will be a little pop-up window on that page where you can enter your questions. So up next, we will talk to an IJ type about what it's truly like to experience the world as an IJ. There are so many people who mistype as an IJ, so I hope this episode will really help clear up some of the confusions about what an IJ type is and what it is not, and also the strengths and struggles they have, particularly when it comes to the Authentic Life Framework. That's coming up next in episode 10. I'll see you then. Take care.